Hi, this is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm here with Martin this week.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you, Martin?
Yeah, not too bad. It's cold and miserable now. We're heading towards winter.
Yes, we are. It's wonderful, isn't it? I don't know. These are the nights are pulling in, but that's a...
Yeah, lots of rain.
Just, absolutely, lots of rain. Yeah. Summer is over. It's gone.
Yep.
Okay, so this week we have a guest on the podcast, and we're going to talk about Fibre Channel. So we've been very, very fortunate to get Mark Jones, who works for the Fibre Channel Industry Association and also works for Broadcom. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
So why I really very briefly there said that you work for the Fibre Channel Industry Association, which really is a mouthful in some respects. It's actually not even any easier when you try and say it as an abbreviation. But you also work for Broadcom. So why don't you just give us a bit of background and explain how that relationship works and what FCIA actually does?
Sure. So the FCIA is Fibre Channel Industry Association, as you say. And the background there is that there's actually a standards organization behind the Fibre Channel Industry Insights T11. And the FCIA is the marketing arm for the standards. So we promote Fibre Channel and all the good things that happen in the development of the Fibre Channel industry.
And we all love Fibre Channel. I mean, nobody loves that Ethernet rubbish. We all love Fibre Channel, don't we?
Oh, well, we need Ethernet too. So,
yeah, okay, true. Yeah, we'll have Ethernet for that front end stuff, but back end. All the storage stuff should still be on Fibre Channel. There we go. Anyway,
excellent.
Let's get into the detail of the protocol for a second or two, because at some point we're going to talk about Fibre Channel and NVMe and what's called FCNVMe, which is a bit of a mouthful as well. But why not just set a bit of background for everybody and just give us an idea of how the standards have evolved out of the T11 committee and exactly what the different components are. Because, for example, people know Fibre Channel as probably a physical connection, but there's actually a Fibre Channel protocol as well, isn't there?
Actually, there is. So as you guys probably know, Fibre Channel goes back a long ways. In fact, I think the first products started shipping around 1998, you know, at 1 gig Fibre Channel, you know, at least for storage use. And, you know, the FCIA itself has been around for almost 25 years. I think we're coming up on that anniversary here soon. And so, you know, T11 and their development of the standards have, you know, consistently met to improve based on the Fibre Channel speed roadmap. So, you know, as you guys probably know, every 3 to 4 years, Fibre Channel has increased in speed from, you know, 1 gig to 2 gig, then 4 gig, then 8, 16, now 32. So there's this constant march to improve and increase the performance of Fibre Channel over the years. So there's been a lot of individual standards, and that's what really Fibre Channel is. It's a collection of individual standards that make up the whole of Fibre Channel as a solution.
Okay, so at the bottom end, we have Fibre Channel physical connection, and that can mean the switches and the HBAs, which is the first starting point. And that's Fibre Channel as a transport.
I was going to say, I'm going to wind you back on something.
Okay.
Because according to Wikipedia, Fibre Channel started in 1988. So it's a big year for Fibre Channel this year.
1988?
Wow. Yeah,
started up at 133 meg.
That's incredible.
Okay. Yeah. That's when its first shipping was 1993. The ANSI standard approval in 1994.
Wow. I'm amazed by that, but I'm not amazed in some respects, because if I look back to when I started work, it wasn't long after starting work that we ended up with SCON. And I always thought SCON was one of those technologies that came in as a sort of a precursor to Fibre Channel, because it was like the fibre implementation of that protocol.
Yep. So obviously research started, well, there you go, 30 years ago.
Wow. So you learn something every day, Mark.
Yeah, you know, we've heard stories, and this all predates me a little bit, but I've heard stories where Fibre Channel was used on fighter jets and inside cars, audio systems, and all kinds of crazy things. So there's a big history that goes back there.
Excellent. So thank you for that interruption, Martin. So getting back to what I was saying, I think I was trying to say that Fibre Channel, we think of Fibre Channel at a physical level. And actually, now you've said that, I was a bit remiss in the sense that I immediately made the assumption, of course, that physically Fibre Channel had to be delivered over fiber. Well, it doesn't, does it? There was a copper version.
Yeah, you'll notice that the spelling of Fibre Channel is F-I-B-R-E and not F-I-B-E-R.
Which is the proper spelling.
Which is as Martin just said, which is the correct spelling for us. You might not think that, but for us it is.
Oh, okay.
So Martin, I think I'm fairly sure that spelling, where we think it's the correct spelling, in American it looks like it's the wrong spelling, was done to differentiate fiber the cable, fiber optics, from Fibre Channel the protocol.
It does appear to Wikipedia to, in order to avoid confusion and create a unique name, the industry decided to change the spelling and use the British English fiber, F-I-B-R-E, for the name of the standard. So you're quite correct, because there is copper in the standard.
Yeah. Above that, though, we actually have protocols which transport the actual data. And unfortunately, I don't know whether it was deliberate or whether it was accidental, but Fibre Channel as a protocol is also the name that's given to the way that the communications occur at the higher level, Mark. A bit of a shame that we ended up with Fibre Channel, the protocol, and Fibre Channel, the physical transport, didn't we?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's actually lots of protocols that run over Fibre Channel. Technically, that layer is called the FC4 layer, where you have the different protocols running. And there is, of course, FCP, you know, SCSI FCP, so all the SCSI communication that's typically known for. And then FICON, maybe you remember VI, even IP runs over that. So there's a lot of different things that can go over that layer.
In one of the jobs I had previously, I noticed that we could run IP over Fibre Channel on the HBAs we had. I think we had JNI cards. Gosh, that's going back a bit.
That's always bad, yeah.
Yeah, going back quite a while. And I looked at it and thought, wow, I can run IP over Fibre Channel. And we're beholden to the network team to give us IP addresses for our backup infrastructure. So I thought, why don't I run backup on IP over our Fibre Channel network? And then I never have to talk to the networking guys ever again. And I was told I wasn't allowed to do it. So I felt very disappointed by that. But I just thought that would be a great solution to keep all of the backup data on a network that we perceived as being faster than our front end network for the backup traffic.
The things you'll try and do to avoid talking to networking people.
Well, it's got to be done. Okay, so moving on, you briefly touched, Mark, there on speeds and feeds. And if we look at this in comparison to Ethernet, I think people always think Ethernet tends to be slightly faster than Fibre Channel, but that's not really the case.
Yeah, it's true. So you'll hear a lot about recently where Ethernet is talking about very high speeds, like 100 gig, 200 gig. And, you know, in comparison to Fibre Channel, where we talk about 16 gig or 32 gig. The difference being that typically within the Fibre Channel community, we mentioned the single lane speed of a Fibre Channel connection. And Ethernet does a lot with taking multiple lanes of a speed and putting them together. So for instance, 100 gig might be 4 25s or something like that, you know, or 40 gig would be 4 10s. So it's hard to make a direct comparison just based on speed. What you really need to look at is the actual available bandwidth over the connection.
Yeah, true. I suppose we could get into the depths of talking about exactly how much data is passing over once you take all the other overheads into consideration, like encoding and so on. So, but in general, it's not like there's a big differential between the two technologies. They, I guess, are using similar optics and similar physical components. So I suppose it makes common sense that they're not going to be that much far apart.
Yeah, so fundamentally, the components are somewhat similar, but there are some unique differences for Fibre Channel use.
So Martin, what speeds are you running at these days?
I think we've got 8s and 16s in via switches, but we still have quite a lot of 4 devices negotiating down to 4, because 4 is plenty for most, well, for a lot of hosts.
And I think that's quite an interesting scenario, isn't it? And it's good to see that a protocol increases, but the higher speeds might be used for inter-switch links or for storage back-end or something like that. It doesn't always mean every single host has to connect at the higher speed, but of course, switch will negotiate down on a port to whatever you want it to be. Well, it's within limits, of course, within I think, is it 1 or 2 generations?
Martin, you touched on probably one of the best benefits that it has been a Fibre Channel benefit for a long time, and that's the ability for Fibre Channel to be backwards compatible at least 2 generations. And it makes it really easy for customers to adopt the new technology while maintaining their investments in the products they've already purchased.
Yeah, I think that's a really positive benefit to it from my perspective. And it's great if you're on a lab, because I've got a newer switch, which is not too bad. I think I've got an 8 gig switch, or I think it's an 8 gig switch. But I've got HBAs, which is slower than that. And I've got storage, which is slower than that. But at the end of the day, it all works and it's all compatible, which makes life pretty good if you're running a lab. You know, you can pick up older hardware and plug it in without too much of a problem. So moving on then, Mark, let's talk about FCNVMe. Now, this is a wonderful acronym because it sort of goes in completely the opposite way to the way that the NVMe over Fabrics acronym goes, where NVMe is at the front of the acronym and Fibre Channel NVMe is actually the other way around. But what we're talking about is running NVMe over a Fibre Channel physical network. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So just to explain that a little bit. So in T11, most of the standards projects have an FC-something, you know, and so it was natural for us to do FC-NVMe to name the standard. But just to back up a bit, where that all came from was the NVMe or the NVM Express group developed the NVMe over Fabric standard a couple years ago and allowed for multiple transports to be used with that. And so T11 started the FC NVMe standard in 2014 as a way to map the fiber channel protocol to the NVMe over fabric standard, hence became FC NVMe.
So I think you just sort of almost said exactly what it actually is there. And it's the ability to run NVMe as a protocol over a fiber channel transport network.
That's correct.
And why bother doing that then? What's the point?
Well, actually, fiber channels is a perfect transport for anything storage. You know, it's, of course, been defined as a lossless network. So you're able to have very high utilization rates on the link without having retransmissions and things like that. So it suits itself very well for storage traffic. So it was natural for us then to define a standard that took advantage of the fiber channel transport for old flash storage like NVMe. Typically is.
So Martin, how often have you spent time trying to work out how to get your buffer credits right?
Less time than I used to. In the past, we used to, but we don't do it so much nowadays. Well, I don't anyway.
No, I remember. Well, you know, you've got somebody to do it for you, haven't you? Let's face it. You get an underling to get your buffer credits sorted out. But yeah, in general, there was a bit of an issue getting all of that right. I think once you got it right, everything just worked really smoothly and it was wonderful. But I think when people talk about Fibre Channel having a bit of a learning curve and being difficult, I don't think it ever was difficult. I just think you had to understand some of those concepts relatively well and make sure you got that config correct. Otherwise, you did actually start to see issues. But once it was set up, I always found it was absolutely, you know, rock solid. So I think that gets back to your point, Mark, that at the outset, this was always designed as a storage protocol. So the transport mechanism at the very bottom of this is built with that in mind.
Correct. Yeah, correct. It's just so well suited for storage traffic, especially high performance storage traffic, as I said, because of the utilization rates.
So in terms of how we layer on top of that NVMe, what was actually needed to achieve that? Was it a complex process or was it relatively simple? I'm guessing it's probably somewhere in the middle of that.
It wasn't impossible. I mean, it's a mapping. So you take two different standards. You have, you know, different command sets. You have to make one map to the other. You know, so it was a process where you have to be careful and deliberate and make sure that you're defining everything correctly.
And in terms of implementation, how many versions have we had so far, and where is the standard at? You know, is it still very new, or how far have we got in terms of evolving it?
It's relatively new. The FC NVMe standard, the first version coming out of T11, just completed in 2018, earlier this year. And T11 has already began work on the next iteration of it. It's called FC NVMe 2. And that standard brings additional error recovery capabilities, something called sequence level error recovery. And that standard's nearing completion now. I think we're going to be announcing the completion of that probably at the end of this year or early next year.
So if I was a customer like Martin, would I see a lot of difference if I decided to go down the FC NVMe route compared to using just FCP on traditional fiber channel?
Well, fundamentally, no matter how you look at it, they both run over the same fiber channel link speeds that are available. So if we take the current Gen 6 fiber channel, for instance, which has a capability of running 32 GFC speeds, which is roughly 3,200 megabytes per second in each direction. So whether you're running FCP or FC NVMe, NVMe over fiber channel, that's the maximum link speed you're going to get out of it. What you're going to find with NVMe over fiber channel is usually lower latency due to the elimination of the SCSI stack on either the host or the target side. You're going to have better parallel processing capability, so you can take advantage of the extra queues that are established with NVMe over fiber channel. So overall, every transaction is going to perform a little bit faster and more efficiently. Even though you have the same maximum link speed, your transactions per second and latency and host and target efficiencies are going to be improved.
NetApp makes some big claims for their NVMe over FC. They're claiming 50% higher IOPS and 34% lower latency. Is it an interesting claim? It'll be very interesting to see how this stacks out. Certainly, if you can run NVMe over fiber channel and obviously traditional SCSI FCP over the same hardware, it's going to be interesting to see how this goes.
Yeah, in fact, some of the demonstrations that we did early on, we were seeing about 55% lower latency when comparing the transports, you know, doing the same operation on the same equipment. There was a significant reduction in latency.
So just touch on that for a second. I guess we should make that clear that what we're saying is that you can potentially run both higher level storage protocols on the same physical infrastructure at the same time.
Yeah, in fact, that's actually a great benefit. You know, very similar to what we mentioned about the backwards compatibility nature of fiber channel. The same kind of thing happens here in that If you have a data center that's running traditional FCP, SCSI, fiber channel protocol, and introduced NVMe over fiber channel, it can run over the same ports at the same time without interruption, without causing any problem to the other protocol. So it's a great way for customers to begin to step into NVMe over fabrics by using their current network infrastructure, fiber channel network infrastructure.
From my perspective, in terms of risk and cost and everything else that goes with it, I see that being a really positive move in terms of the way that you could adopt the technology. Because first of all, you physically don't have to rip out and replace anything. But obviously, at the same time, you can it's almost like a switch to get the benefit. It's just like flipping a switch and you're there. I know there's a lot more involved in it in terms of installing drivers at the back end, and the storage array has to support it, and then the storage platform might need a bit of tweaking. But in general, you're not ripping and replacing infrastructure like, for instance, when people talked about us all going to fiber channel over Ethernet, FCOE. It just seems like, you know, from your perspective, you would potentially see that as a more controlled and safer migration process.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think for some of the enterprise level applications where you traditionally run under FC and you've not yet prepared to look at some things like the software defined storage, the vSANs of this world, where you want to still keep a fiber channel SAN in place, I think the ability with the later versions of the switches, the Gen 5 and Gen 6s and above, obviously, to run both may well be an advantage, certainly where you're doing some complex tiering between storage tiers, where you may still have traditional FCP arrays, but you've got some high performance NVMe arrays. Yeah, I can see a converged fabric there, which is really weird if we start talking about converged fabrics over FC when we were five, well, probably longer than that, we're talking about converging your fabrics all onto Ethernet.
Yeah, that's an interesting difference, isn't it? That in actual fact, people are almost saying death of fiber channel's going away. But I think that's just not true, Mark, is it? We're not seeing a massive decline in the adoption of fiber channel, or at least the use of fiber channel.
Well, you know, there's an old joke in the fiber channel industry. I know as far as long as I've been involved, there's always been this prediction that something was going to take over fiber channel and fiber channel is going to be dead. But there was a colleague of mine that his answer to that would be, every time they say that, I cash a bonus check. So, you know, for some reason, fiber channel keeps going, and it always endures and ends up being the best choice for reliable storage traffic.
And I think that's probably an important factor, actually, in that it is that reliability factor because it was built for storage in the first place. Now, if we look at the difference between, say, fiber channel and Ethernet, we're not saying either protocol's bad or good or one is better than the other. And in fact, on a previous podcast we had, we talked about exactly that, you know, trying to compare the two protocols and try and say, was one better than another? And I think it would be a mistake to try and compare the two as if to say one needs to supersede the other when really actually it doesn't, because there's justifications and good reasons for them coexisting together in the data center.
Yeah, I think that's correct. You know, you mentioned the FCOE example, and I think some of the challenges for Ethernet networks have been trying to configure them to be lossless in the same efficient manner that fiber channel is. And, you know, that might have been some of the complication that made it difficult for people to migrate to completely lossless networks and use FCOE.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because obviously fiber channel was designed to be lossless. Data center bridging and such for Ethernet is an addition to the protocol. So fiber channel had it from day one. And we all know actually adding things later often leads to some compromises or adds complexity.
Yeah, you know, for NVMe over fiber channel, there's really nothing that needs to change in the fiber channel fabric in the network. You know, as we mentioned, it's just another FC4 type, which can, you know, you don't need any changes in the network for that to take place. Most of the changes take place at the endpoints, on the host controllers or in the storage arrays.
But yeah, going down to that next level of detail, to me, it would seem the logical thing that you would change would be firmware on the HBA and drivers on the hosts. But part of the driver that you would install on the host would effectively emulate the fiber channel devices or make them look like SCSI devices on the host, which you can then configure up. I assume that the driver now makes it look like you've got an NVMe device or at least a local NVMe device to that host. And you configure the device as if it's an NVMe LUN.
That's correct. So an example of a Linux operating system, you know, they have the ability to manage NVMe devices, and the device coming over an NVMe over fiber channel fabric to it is going to look like another NVMe device. So it comes across as being really native for them, the way it's represented.
One of the things we're seeing about NVMe is the amount of parallelism, woohoo, great word, the amount of parallelism that you can get from an NVMe device, and the fact that you've got more queues and you've got greater queue depth. Now, when we used to do this on traditional storage, that queue would be at the front of the storage array, and you'd have a queue on each logical port on the front-end storage array, and obviously you'd have LUNs on ports depending on how the vendor implemented it. It sounds to me like that actually that problem could get bigger. And there's a bit of an issue there, or at least there's some work to do for vendors to support NVMe over fiber channel on the front end of their storage arrays. You could potentially have a bit of a bigger scaling problem to do, or at least some work to do in order to make it work effectively.
When you make a connection with an NVMe over fiber channel between an initiator and a target, the two ends negotiate the number of queues that are established. And so now you have parallel working queues for the IO operations, as opposed to a single queue that we used to use before. So what happens there is that you're able to run multiple IO operations, all with very low latency and not in a single serial fashion. So that's where a lot of the latency benefits that applications get come from.
Okay. I see what you're saying. So does that mean that potentially there could be a tuning parameter that allows you to say on this particular host, we'll allow 5 queues or 10 queues, and each of them could be independent, and therefore, if you look at the way, say, something like vSphere works, where it's obviously running multiple guests that are potentially writing to lots of different storage data stores, you could, for example, make each data store a separate queue so that you could effectively eliminate some of the queuing cross and some of that noisy neighbor stuff.
Yeah, potentially. Probably the most logical way to deal with that, though, would be taking advantage of multi-core processors where each thread of I/O can have its own queue based on a core.
Obviously, at the host side, your firmware and driver on the HBA card might change. What about on the switch? I mean, I assume there must be some changes to do there, even if not to be able to realize that there's different traffic flowing through the system.
Yeah, what we've seen from switches is that, NVMe over fiber channel can run across the existing switches today, but it looks like some of the vendors are releasing enhancements to their switches to take advantage of the manageability and the monitoring capabilities specific to NVMe traffic. On the host side, what we're seeing is that most of the vendors for HBAs are supporting NVMe over fiber channel with their Gen 6 HBAs, and they will have specific firmware and drivers for NVMe over fiber channel. And we're seeing a lot of that now going in box, meaning that those drivers are now part of the operating systems themselves natively.
Oh, right. Okay. That makes a bit of a difference. Previously, there was a lot of hassle trying to do that, wasn't there? Having to install the correct version of drivers, especially on Windows, I seem to remember. That seemed to be quite temperamental.
Yeah, but Chris, you're never going to see drivers for OS X, so you never get your machine to
No, that's probably true. So what do you think, Martin? I mean, do you think that's something you would be looking to migrate towards? Would you move away from FCP?
So there is a push within our data centers to try and remove as much fiber channel as possible and move to more of a file and object. But for those systems where we do need the low latency, I can see FC NVMe actually having a use case and moving towards it. It's really going to depend on how quickly the back-end storage vendors adopt it and how easy it is. I mean, we talk about switch vendors within FC, but there's only really two. So it's not a huge amount of change in there. HBAs, there's not a huge number of HBA manufacturers and vendors either. So from a standards point of view, it's a relatively easy switch because you're not herding a lot of cats. Whereas for end users, have been pushed along this converged data center infrastructure for a long time. To have this come along, it's going to take some shifting of attitude towards fiber channel. Fiber channel, I can see from this, isn't dead. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who thought it was dead. Whether it's going to be a mass growth technology or whether it's just going to be focused on those enterprises which already have it, that will be very interesting to see whether we're going to see a growth of it again.
Yeah, I mean, what's your opinion, Mark? Because I look at it and think, we're all being told Ethernet's where things are going to be heading. But actually, in lots of respects, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to change what could be a heavy amount of investment you've got. So do you have any sort of insight where you think it might go?
We see the most recent analyst numbers. I don't know if you track any of those, but it looks like fiber channel in general, the shipments for that are very stable, if not slightly on the uptick in the last couple of quarters. So the notion that fiber channel is declining is in a lot of ways not true. It's very stable. There's a very good place in the data center for fiber channel, and we expect it to continue that way.
And I do wonder, just finishing that point off, whether the learning curve that people had to go through to learn fiber channel and that commitment and that effort that they had to do, either people think, well, we've invested in this, so we should stay. That might be one angle. But the other one could be, well, we've got to now rediscover all of that stuff for NVMe over an Ethernet network. And a lot of the protocol features that people might be very comfortable with, like multipathing, device discovery, and so on, I don't think they're there yet in that side of the house. So it may well be that that gives Fibre Channel some help in the short term.
Yeah, as far as manageability, you know, within the fabric itself, if you're used to the concepts of zoning and configuring switches for multipath and all the management of the fabric itself remains absolutely the same. You still have name services and zones and all that stuff you're used to. So you don't have to relearn that. As far as multipathing and things that happen on the host to deal with that, you know, those are catching up, and there's going to be a natural period of time where as a new technology comes out that everybody's got to catch up to it. We see that happening rapidly now. There's now multipath. We're seeing that available in some of the latest distributions coming out in the operating systems. So we'll certainly see that catch up here quickly.
So looking at the two protocols then, should we put our money on Fibre Channel or should we put our money on Ethernet? Who wants to tell me where they're going to put their money first?
Well, I would like to see keep it in Fibre Channel.
Is that, would you have a vested interest to see Fibre Channel?
maybe so.
Probably, yeah. Okay, that doesn't make sense.
I wouldn't put my money on either of them. I think they both have a place. I'm going to be very balanced on this. I think the thing with Fibre Channel at the moment, certainly within a data center, you mentioned things like multipathing. It just works. We trust it. Ethernet multipathing, and still at times, I think this, even after all these years, I think sometimes it just seems to go south and it doesn't quite work how you would expect. So Fibre Channel there is always going to be there. If you're for those workloads, which you really, really care about, I think you probably keep them on Fibre Channel. Whereas Ethernet will keep going from strength to strength. Certainly as you'll go from file and block, that's going to run over your Ethernet. So I'll be neutral and say they will both stay in the data center.
My opinion, I think probably I would say that over time, Fibre Channel will probably slowly decline. And actually, probably like you're already thinking of in terms of a strategy, Martin, I think it will become much more focused as purely the go-to block protocol for systems, whereas Ethernet will continue to shine as the file and object protocol. And because we've got more growth in that data area, I think that will in effect indirectly affect the amount of Fibre Channel we see deployed in the data center anyway. That will be the impact from my perspective. That's what I think.
I was going to say the other thing is Fibre Channel, a lot of people think it's hard and magical. It's not. Fibre Channel is really easy. If you understand how to set up a static route in IP, you can do Fibre Channel zoning.
Yeah. So I'm now face palming for anybody who can't see me, because you're now just making it really easy for people to not pay me a huge amount of money to show them how to deploy Fibre Channel networks.
Yeah, we haven't done it. Haven't done any of that kind of work for 8 years, Chris.
No, admittedly, I haven't. So that's probably not a big loss to me at this point. Okay. Well, Mark, that was great. Thanks for the conversation. Really enjoyed that. I think some really good points in there. If people want to follow up and find out more, can they stalk you on social media, or should they go to FCIA and follow them and, you know, websites and things? Where can they find out more?
Thank you, Chris. There's a lot of great information out there. I would start with fiberchannel.org. That's the FCIA webpage. There's also a ton of great educational material that's available. We have a series of education programs on Bright Talk that go from the basics of Fibre Channel to more in-depth topics from industry experts, and it's really good. We also have a Fibre Channel solutions guide on our website, which will go over a lot of different topics. You can also contact us through LinkedIn and Twitter as well.
Okay, great. Absolutely wonderful. And I think there's even occasionally a physical like pamphlet or brochure that you produce once in a while, because I've seen one of those before. I think I got given one at Flash Memory Summit.
Yeah, that's our Fibre Channel Solutions Guide. There's a lot of great information in there, and you can find that on our website.
Okay, great. Well, once again, thanks for joining us. As usual, we'll have all of that detail written into the show notes, which people can find online at storageimpact.com. You can follow us at Storage Impact on Twitter. And of course, we're on LinkedIn as well in our own Storage Impact group. Once again, guys, thanks for joining us, and catch up with you soon.
Cheers, Chris.
Thanks, guys.